Yaakov Avinu is on the way. Yaakov Avinu is leaving Eretz Yisrael. He's heading off to Beis Lavan, heading off to what will be the first but not last galus of his life. And on the way, he is entirely taken by surprise by a glorious nevuah. And he wakes up and says he had no idea. He didn't see this coming. Chen yesh Hashem makam hazeh. Anochi lo yodati. It sounds like he didn't realize the significance of the place where he slept. According to Chazal, he slept on Makam Mikdash, on Har Moriah, and Har Abayis. And while he's there overnight, Chazal also understands that what he does right before he goes to sleep, by Yifgah Ba Makom, sounds like he bumped into this location. So Chazal understands in the beginning of the fourth parak of Brachas that this is the pasuk that's meramis to us that Yaakov tikkun tefilas arvus. So tefilas are connected avos. Tefilas avos tiknum. Avraham Avinu is responsible for the institution of davening Kadosh Baruch Hu in the morning, Yitzchak for davening Kadosh Baruch Hu in the afternoon, and Yaakov for the institution of davening Kadosh Baruch Hu at night. By yivgah b'makom and pigia ela lashon tefila. So one of the layers of what's going on here is Yaakov Avinu is on his way to Uncle Lavan, on his way to Galus. He ends up, he finds himself at Har Abayis. He davens Meirav at Har Abayis. It's entirely like the Avraham Yitzchak davened at night as well. But this was the Meirav that would become the prototype, not just his personal Meirav, but the prototype for all Meirav's in the future. Can I help you?
Can we just have a look at your life?
Please. By all means. This is a Meirav, this will become the prototype for Meirav forever after. Klal Yisrael's Meirav, last night and tomorrow night and every night before and in the future, is rooted in this Vayifgah B'Makom. We're modeling ourselves after Yaakov. Right after that momentous Meirav, he goes to sleep and has this glorious, glorious nevuah. What does he see? Sula Mutzav Aratza Roshem Agiyah Shamayma, the dream of the ladder. And the ladder that goes from the ground all the way up to the sky. Malachei Elokim Olim V'Yardimbo. So what's this supposed to mean? Because there are two parts of the dream. The first part of the dream is that he sees a vision of Malachim going up and down a ladder. Interesting, they're going up and then down. And usually we think of Malachim as being rooted, being headquartered in Shamayim. We would have expected they go down and then up. Interesting. They're all in the Yardim though. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he has a vision of Ribbono Shalom atop the ladder, and Ribbono Shalom is there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, I'm going to be with you. I'm going to guard you. You're going into a place where you're going to feel much more vulnerable. You're leaving Eretz Yisrael. At that point, you already felt pretty vulnerable in Eretz Yisrael too. His brother Esav was looking to kill him, literal fratricide. But he says, you're going into Terra Cognita, you're going into uncharted territory. I'm going to be with you. Shmartich v'chasher teilech. Vashivo sicha. Adam azos. Rosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to bring you back. You're going to Galus. I'll be with you in Galus. I'll come back with you to Eretz Yisrael. Lo ezavcha ayesher masisi esesher dibajlach. Rosh Baruch Hu says, I'm not letting go. You're going to scary places. I'm not letting go of you. So the two halves of the dream, how does it hang together? What does it all mean? What's the significance? The malachim, the up the ladder, down the ladder. Wow, what's Rav Moshe showing Yaakov? Says the Ramban here, oh, b'chalom ha-nevuah. The opening Ramban in Parshas Vayetze, Perek Chav Ches, Pasuk Yud Beis, here, oh, b'chalom ha-nevuah, ki kol ha-naseh ba'aretz naseh adei ha-malachim. He says, you have to know that what happens on this world happens via malachim. Hakol b'gzeiras elyon aleihem. But everything they're doing is b'gzeiras elyon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is deciding what's going to happen. And as we had a chance to talk about the other day, malachim are creatures that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, the same as all the physical creatures that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. They're spiritual tools, metaphysical tools, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses to run the world. Derech mashal, obviously any mashal we have for HaKadosh Baruch Hu is by definition highly imperfect. But just as a first approximation, we are, after all, in the STEM lab, so there are a lot of tools. So, but we'll talk about a simple one that even the non-STEM people will be comfortable with, a flathead screwdriver. So, you could, if you really wanted to, or a wrench. So, you're gonna tighten a bolt. So, you could, if you wanted to, do it with your finger. Or you could take a wrench and do it, maybe, especially if it's a ratchet, and do it more effectively. But the wrench isn't tightening the screw. The person is. The person either does it with his hands, or the person uses some tools to get the job done. But the one who's doing it is the man, not the tool. The tool is just a tool. There happens to be a great, there was a fantastic, not a political cartoon, not political, but in that genre, there's a book that was published a couple of years ago in Eretz Yisrael about becoming more mindful about how we use our smartphones. And you see, and making sure that you're in the driver's seat as opposed to sort of just being dragged along wherever it takes you. So the cartoon on the cover is you see this kid with his smartphone, and up above, on a ledge, there's another, a larger smartphone that's holding puppet strings. And the kid is attached to the puppet strings. And the title was Kelim B'Yad Kelenu, Tools in the Hand of Our Tools. A very profound insight. Are we using it? Or is it using it? Who's in the driver's seat? A tool is meant to be something where I use it. The screwdriver isn't tightening the screw. I'm tightening the screw. I use a screwdriver to do it more effectively. If you use a screwdriver, screwdriver is one way to get the job done. If you were outside with me yesterday, if you were standing right next to my spot at the fire drill yesterday, so you might have noticed that the fellows who are, they're replacing either the water main or the sewer main, they were cutting this like tremendous, like 4 or 5 foot diameter PVC pipe, massive pipe. And there were a couple of guys there. One guy's holding, the other guy has a chainsaw. And he just zoop, like threw butter. He could have used, you know, his hands, and he would have gotten it done in around 50 years. Right? Or he could have used an axe or a handsaw, and it would have taken, you know, a day to cut it. Or use a chainsaw, and in a matter of 30 seconds, you cut through the entire PVC pipe. So, but again... The cutter wasn't the chainsaw. The cutter was the person. The man was cutting the pipe. He chose to use this tool or that tool to get the job done. HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created tools called malachim, with which he uses, which God uses to run his world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs his world, and he often uses this toolkit that he himself created called malachim, through which he's mashpi on the world, through which He runs the world. Coming back to Ramban. Ramban says, before I explain to the Nevuah, you have to understand, they're Malachim, the Nevuah, you have to understand what a Malach is, and what role a Malach plays. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets stuff done via Malachim. HaKol B'Gzeres Elyon Aleihem. He's the one, a devotional one who's in charge, and he's directing, he's guiding, he's using these tools, these Malachim, to do stuff, to accomplish things in this world. Ki malachei Elokim asher shalach Hashem l'saleich ba'aretz, the malachim whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends to roam in the world, and he tells the Bam that itself is a turn of phrase from Zechariah, lo yasu ketana'o gedola ad shuvam l'satzev al adon kal aretz. The way the Nevi'im will sometimes describe the action of a malach is that the Nevi'im describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends the malach down, and then the Malach comes back to consult. He'll come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and give a report. He'll come back, Lisa Seva Adon Kalart. Malach will come back to the master of the universe, Lamer Lefanav, to give the report. His Halach Nubaretz, we rode through the world. Hine Yoshevet B'Shalva. Maybe they'll say things are peaceful. Or maybe they'll say, Rachman Tzlan, Meleya Chere Vedam. Life is anything but peaceful. There's war, there's bloodshed. And then, And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu would say, okay, based on that report, here's what I want you to do. That's the way the Nevi'im describe, that's the way people used to operate. You have to come back from the field to give a report and then get instructions how to go forward. Before you had phones. And before you had telegrams, back in the day, modern technology. not telegram the app, telegram like telegrams with a lowercase d. There used to be such a thing. So that the Nevi'im describe the way in which Malachim are acting on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's directive. As the Malachim go, they check out what's happening, they come back to give a report, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, now do this. They have, oh, so why is Rabbi telling us this? They have, and why, don't take questions soon, and why is it that first he sees a vision of Malachim, and then he sees and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is standing on top, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving him a message. What does this all mean? The Ribbono Shel Olam shows Yaakov a vision of he himself, Hashem Yisbarach, atop the ladder. After Yaakov sees Malachim going up and going down, the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu atop the ladder, I'm going to take care of you. What that means is, now that you begin to appreciate what a Malach is, Mavticho Yaakov Avtacha Gedola, the promise that Kadosh Baruch Hu makes Yaakov is tremendous. It's monumental, because Lahodiyah Shehu Lo Yiyeh B'Hamalachim. He's showing Yaakov, you see, this is how things usually work. Malachim going up, Malachim going down, but that's not what's going to happen to you. Rabban, by the way, just very subtly explained to us without even highlighting it. Malachim going up and down, that's what he just described. The way Malachim usually operates, the way Kadosh Baruch Hu usually operates, is Malachim come down, check out what's going on, come back, Yishamayim, so that they report back, and they get their marching orders, they go back down. So number one, the Ramban, very subtly, without even making a big deal of it at all, explains to us why it's all in the order. Because you're getting by seeing, yeah, they started up top, so to speak, metaphorically, they started in Yishamayim, but they came down, check things out, go, now we watch them go up to make their report, and come back down with instructions on how to operate. So we're not getting the full picture would be they go down, they go up, they go down, they go up. But what the pasuk describes, the going up with their report and the coming back down with instructions, gives you those two movements, give you a full sense of the various steps of the malach. The coming back with information, the checking for information, and then the coming down to implement. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is almost like sort of like over to the side, here you see what usually goes on, and suddenly the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Yaakov Avinu, that's what everyone else gets. That's standard operating procedure for the universe. The cosmos usually operates that way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs his world through the tools that he created called Malachim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Yaakov, that's what usually happens, that's not what you're going to get. Lahodiya shehu lo yiyeh biyad HaMalachim. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you're not going to be managed by me indirectly via the tools called Malachim. Rather, Yechelek Hashem, Yeimo Tabin. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to give him a more direct Hashgacha Pratis. This is an example where we've already seen a couple of times the idea of both the Ramban and the Ramban and other Rishonim had of a sliding scale of Hashgacha Pratis. The closer one is to Kadosh Baruch Hu, the greater the extent, the more hands-on, the more direct, so to speak, is that Kadosh Baruch Hu is Hashkacha. It can be more, it can be less. It's a spectrum. And we saw it last week in the context of location. Eretz Yisrael is more direct Hashkacha process, and that's why Kodah, Matan Torah, it's even true nowadays that a mitzvah in Eretz Yisrael is even more meaningful than a mitzvah in Chutz La'aretz. Nowadays, it's obligatory, regardless. Yeah, for the Elvis, it wasn't obligatory. So Rabban said last week, you remember, that they volunteered to keep the mitzvahs davka in Eretz Yisrael, where there's an even greater degree of connectivity to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Rabban is saying here, it's not only a question of location, of where, it's also a question of who. HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling Yaakov Avinu, he knows that language that he used, Yechelek Hashem. Where is that from? Where in the end of Chumash? What, who or what is described? Does it say Tazim Baram? Oh, Tazim Baram. Dvarim Lamed Beis. Where is that? Listen, Hazinu. Shiras Hazinu. Ki chelek Hashem amo. Yaakov chevel nachlosov. Klal Yisrael are chelek Hashem. So Rabban saying that comes from here. That spiritual phenomenon that Moshe describes in Shiras Hazinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Yaakov about it right here. You're going to be chelek Hashem. What does chelek Hashem mean? It means you're going to have a more direct hashkacha process. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved with, engaged with, cares about, manages the entire universe, and particularly all of humanity. But there's going to be an even more hands-on, so metaphorically speaking, even more hands-on approach to Kalal Yisrael. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now the image, the first half of the chalom, the image of the sulam, and then the second half of the chalom, the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu atop the sulam, it's all one coherent picture. HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him, here's what usually happens, but then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is above the sulam and says, but you're going to have more than that. Other tzaddikim have a lower level. Interesting. Right now the Ramban is understanding it specifically, perhaps not even all of Klal Yisrael, but particularly Yaakov Avinu himself. A higher level of other tzaddikim, about whom the pasuk says, "Ki malachav yitzav alach l'shmarcha b'chol derachav." Then he says, "See, Rabban seems to think that that's pshuto shal mikra. That's what this dream means. Pshuto shal mikra. The message of this nevuah is you're going to merit an even greater degree of hashgacha pratis, an even more intensively hands-on, direct type of hashgacha than others will." So you're going into a place of great vulnerability, you're going into Beis Lavan, you don't even know how many dangers are lurking there. I'm with you. I have your back. I have your back even more directly than have the back of others. And then he says, so that's Al Pi Pshuto. And then he quotes, Al Das Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol. Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, that is, as he points out at the bottom, the very ancient medrash called the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, as in Rabbi Eliezer the Tana, the contemporary Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua. So, Adas Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, Ha'isa Zos Hamara Be'inyan Ke'inyan Bein Abisarim. He understood, the Pirkei Blazer presents it as being a parallel to Avraham's Nevu of the Brisbane Abisarim. Ke'inyan Bein Abisarim La'Avram. Ki Her'ohu, how do you mean? This pshat we're very familiar with. That the malachim, there were specific, doesn't say, Sukkot doesn't tell us how many malachim. The Pirkei Blazer says, and this is quoted later on, that there were four malachim. And he watched, and also, the Pirkei Blazer is also dealing with the question of, what malachim going up, they're coming down, why aren't they going down, they're coming up? The Pirkei Blazer says, that there were four malachim, and he watched each one go up and then come down. The next one goes up and comes down. And that corresponds, that was meant to be imagery, telling Yaakov Avinu about the four empires that would have control consecutively, in succession, over Klal Yisrael and over a significant chunk of the world. And it was, Kadosh Baruch Hu was showing him the rise and fall, literally the rise and fall of Malachim, and that was imagery for the, figuratively, the rise and fall of different world powers. Malasam v'iridasam. That language of the Arba Malchios, that comes explicitly in the Psukim in the latter half of Daniel, the first half of Daniel, the 12th Prakim of Daniel, first half of Daniel are the episodes in his life. This golden statue, Hanan, Mishael, Azariah, and the King Shanaish, and the writing on the wall, and so on and so forth. Then the latter half of Sefer Daniel, the Prakim Zayin Tiyud Beis, are the different nevuos and visions that he had, the different tefillos that he davened, and a recurring theme in several of those visions in the latter half of Sefer Daniel is the Arba Malchios. This is a succession of four different superpowers, and what the rise and fall of each one would look like. So Pirkei Elazar understands that theme is also present in this week's parasha. V'zeh tam malachei Elokim, kemo shamar b'Daniel, sar malchus Yavam, sar malchus Pras, when Daniel discusses the Avraham Malchus, sometimes he refers to the Malachim who had particular shlita and responsibility over different nations. Hivticho, so it's not just who are these Malachim going up and down, specifically the Sarim of these powers, of these nations. Hivticho ki hu yisala yeimo b'chol sheilech b'nehem. Kadosh Baruch Hu is telling Yaakov Avinu, I'll be with you. I'll be with you, and I'll keep an eye over you as you go through different stages in Jewish history, as throughout the rise and fall of Babel and the rise and fall of Persia, the rise and fall of Rome, and so on and so forth. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, other nations will rise and fall. I'll be holding your hand throughout. I'm sorry. Yes, very Mark Twainish. What's the connection to Brisbane Absar? He said this. Rabban had introduced this idea by saying, "Oh, it's like the Brisbane Absar. How is this? How is Yaakov's dream of the Chalom like Avraham Avinu's dream of the Brisbane Absar?" Yeah, what would you say? Good. So Rav Shavel says what Yitzi said, that there are approaches in Chazal that interpret parts of the Brisbane Absarim as also referring to different Malchios. The bird and the ayat and so on and so forth, that parts of the imagery of that Chalom, of that Nevuah, also relates to the Avraham Malchios. It could also be, perhaps, it may be less about, there's one approach to what the Ramban is, the equation Ramban is drawing, the connection that he's making between the Pirkei Belezer understanding of the Chalom HaSulam on the one hand and Brisbane Absarim on the other hand. So one approach is what you're saying, what Shavel said, it has to do with content. They're both about the Avraham Malchus. Another possibility is that it's a thematic connection. What do you say? A key turning point in both their lives. Good, good, good. But why specifically this chat? Okay, good, good. So certainly there's a sense, and that's true even for the first chat, that I'm with you and I'm going to take care of you, yeah? Okay, good. It's about Haftacha that for Kadosh Baruch Hu Shmir. But specifically, what's the difference, Rabbi Osai? Ask yourself this question. What's the difference between, what changed from the first shot to the second shot, fundamentally? What's the most basic difference between the Pshuto and Pirkei Tzur B'Lezer? No? Right. Is it personal or is it national? Is it for the next couple of decades or is it for the next couple of millennia? Right. The first shot is HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Yaakov. You, personally, Yaakov, Mr. Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov, but you, the individual Yaakov, you're going into Haran, you're going to Jewish place, I will take care of you personally. And in a very direct, lavish, spiritually lavish way. But then the Pirkei Belezer's understanding al Darach Drash that this is about Klal Yisrael. It's not about Yaakov. It's not about the next couple of decades. This is about Klal Yisrael going through Babel and Paras and Rome. This is about how Klal Yisrael is going to survive the Visigoths, how Klal Yisrael is going to survive the Spanish Inquisition, how Klal Yisrael is going to survive the Nazis. It's the big picture of Jewish history. So on the one hand, both Brisbane Absarim and the Chalom HaSulam, according to this approach to the Chalom HaSulam, talk about different stages. There's imagery about different stages of Jewish history, and the theme in both. What is the Kabbalah Kadosh Baruch Hu? Remember how Kadosh Baruch Hu introduces Brisbane Absarim? This was a question on the quiz a couple weeks ago. How does Kadosh Baruch Hu introduce Brisbane Absarim? He tells Avram to go somewhere. Go where?
Outside.
I mean, he takes him outside. Why does he take him outside? So Rashi says, to see the stars, but then why do we have to know? Okay, if he says see the stars, obviously he'll walk outside if he needs to. No. So Rashi goes from Chazal, additional level of interpretation, same itzak din shalach. Leave you're locked into an astrological, you're locked into mazel, you're locked to, you think that you're governed by the principles of history. The principles of history don't apply to Klal Yisrael. Ein mazel Yisrael. Jewish history is going to evolve in a very different way than human history typically does. You're not going to have the types of rise. There'll be plenty of ups and downs, but you're not going to disappear into the ash, into the dust of history. What's Mark Twain's terminology? I'm forgetting his poetry. But Clydesdale will continue to thrive, continue to survive and thrive, and continue to be a force in the world, and continue to make impact for thousands of years in a way that no other non-dominant civilization ever did. So that theme of Netzach Yisrael, of the eternality of Klal Yisrael, is the dominant theme. It's the opening theme, and ultimately the most foundational theme of Bris Mehavsarim, and that is the ultimate theme here. And it's not just about the details of how long each malchus will last for. Those are important details, but the Yisod HaDvarim is Netzach Yisrael. The Yisod HaDvarim is other empires will come and go. Klal Yisrael will maintain its meaningfulness. I'm sorry? The stuff of dreams. That sounds right. Can I take a look back at that article in Harper's? Amru! Take a listen. The last few lines of Ramban. Now he actually quotes, after having spoken about the Tirgit of Elazar, he actually quotes it. Herelo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Arba Malchios Moshlon V'Avda. The Tirgit of Elazar tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him in this dream four powers, how they reigned and how they disintegrated. Mashlan v'avda. Heror sal malchus bavel. O l'shiva ukim v'yori. What's the significance of the ladder? Because it's a number of rungs. He sees the malach, the sar, the malach that's in charge of malchus bavel, goes up 70 rungs, falls down. Heror sal malchus madai. 180 ukim. And he falls down. Heror sal malchus adam. Oh, the Niyari. It's just going up and up and up and up, and it just looks like it's endless. It looks like it's never coming down. Armalo Yaakov, Achel Shaol Turah. This is forever. We're going to be just, Klal Yisrael is ultimately going to disintegrate and dissolve if Malchus Edom, if Dolus Edom goes on forever. Armalo Kodesh Baruch Hu, Tadbiya Kenesher, Rosh Hashem says to him, they're going to have a good run, a very long run, but that too, Malchus Edom also will come to an end. This Dolus will also come to an end. Shmuel has been waiting very patiently, and then let's take some other questions, and then I want to close this with a third approach that the Gemara actually has to this Halom. A third approach that has a lot of, has a very, very significant practical muster to it. Yeah?
The idea that Mamacham had like a tool, right? Like for us, when we use a tool, if we really can't do it as quickly the other way, Hashem doesn't need the Mamacham. It's not like, I mean, Hashem, oh.
So Shmuel is asking a great question. Shmuel is saying, a human being uses a tool, I use a ratchet because it saves me time. I use the fellow outside who was working on the mains, so he was using a chainsaw because it saved him time and energy. Either he probably couldn't break the PVC pipe with his bare hands, and if he could, it was a lot easier and simpler and quicker. With that Kaddish Baruch was not a matter of can't. Now, so that's why I said before that any analogy, you're making a very, very sharp point, and you're touching on something very important. As I said before, any analogy that we have for Kaddish Baruch is by definition going to be an imperfect analogy. Why? And it has to be that way. Why? The Ramban says, Rambam writes in the Hakdama Techelet, not the famous part of the Hakdama, the end where he goes through the Yud Gimli Kari Amuna, but earlier is a very broad conversation about ultimate purpose. Very, very fascinating. I guess it's a lot of very important topics in the Hakdama Techelet. So the Rambam writes at one point, he says, imagine a person, he gives a mashal, I'll build it out a little more, but this essentially is the Rambam's mashal. So imagine, and this mashal is, for me, has been transformative in terms of appreciating a lot of Agadah. and a lot of machshava. So imagine you have a fellow, an intelligent fellow, but was congenitally blind. He was born blind. He's never seen in his life. Very intelligent fellow, but he's never had the bracha that we take for granted, that we open our eyes and we see things. So if you've ever interacted with people who are blind, they learn to compensate. Baruch Hashem, it's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the human beings are remarkably adaptable, and people who don't are not blessed with sight, other senses tend to become far more keen, and they are more able to function than one would have perhaps imagined. The hearing compensates, the different pieces compensate, and Baruch Hashem, people have over the centuries thought of tools that can help. There's Braille, and there's a cane, and there's a this and that. There are different ways that Baruch Hashem, people who are not blessed with sight can lead very full functional lives. If you've ever, quick show of hands, who here has ever been at the Blind Museum in Cholon? Okay. If you've been there, Dialogue in the Dark, or for those who have not been there, it's a really remarkable exhibit. They created this space, a series of rooms that are absolutely lightless. No light whatsoever. Not like a little bit of light that your eyes eventually adapt, you can see something. Zero. You could be there for an hour, you still see nothing. There is no light with which to see. Kihuza. And it's like a surreal experience for a sighted person to really experience what it's like to be blind. And part of the irony of it, by design, is that you have guides. The guides are all blind. But you're on equal footing now. As a matter of fact, you're less than equal footing because they have adapted to functioning without sight. Now you're temporarily as sightless as they are, but you haven't adapted. So you need that. But you, over the course of the hour or so, you begin to function. But with all that, Baruch Hashem, a very intelligent, highly functional, congenitally blind person, living life to its fullest. But imagine you're trying to explain to him colors. Trying to explain to him blue and green and orange. Or, let's dig deeper. You're trying to explain to him the difference between different shades of blue. See, that outside is sky blue, and that shopping bag behind Rafi's head is also sky blue. And over there, the handles over there are a teal blue, or blue teal. On this tefillin bag also, there are at least three different shades of blue. And then that chair is a light navy blue. And then there's royal blue. You're trying to explain to them different blues. Can you imagine having that conversation? Now, in theory, if he's a physicist, so he might be able to understand sort of non-intuitively that there are, you know, that most human beings have organs that can sense certain wavelengths of electromagnetic radiation. All right. Just like X-rays sense other wavelengths of electromagnetic radiation. So you might understand sort of abstractly that most people can use their eyes to sense certain wavelengths of electromagnetic radiation. They call that sight. And that people who can see sort of sense different wavelengths differently as different colors. Think about if he's a physicist, he might be able to understand that theoretically. But he's not going to have it like in the kishkas to like intuit what it means. He's not going to get it. That how he experienced blue, how he experienced green. It would be an incredibly difficult conversation. Why? He's a very intelligent fellow. But he's never had any experience with this. So without experience, without having ever experienced, our intuition is a result of the sum of our experiences. So you can abstractly understand something out of your experiences, but it's very hard to have an intuitive grasp. So it stands to reason, it's not surprising that we have a very limited grasp of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have never, we're finite creatures of an infinite creator. We have never experienced infinity. We have never experienced what it means to live without time, or to live unbounded by space. That's totally out of our experience. So I can understand theoretically, well, if time and space themselves are creatures of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so obviously, you know, he created a box, so to speak, called time and space, within which he creates the rest of the universe. So obviously, he's not in the box. theoretically, I sort of get that, but again, there I go using spatial metaphors. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is outside of the box, outside. That itself is a spatial way of thinking. Yeah, because my all of my experiences have been within the framework of time and space. So of course, my intuition is that way. Of course, our mishalim for HaKadosh Baruch Hu are always limited and imperfect, because the mishalim are trying to take this abstract reality and make it intuitive in a different type of setting. So we coming in, we know that our mishalim for HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be only partially good. They'll give us a little bit, a first approximation, a first draft of Havana. So you said in particular, talk about Malachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu tools, not really in the same way that human beings use tools. I use a tool to do the things that I can't do, or to make it easier to do something that would otherwise be harder. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing is impossible and nothing is hard. So it's clearly not the same thing. As a first approximation, okay, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is choosing to do things with these tools, not necessarily for the same reason, but at least it gives me a little bit of a Havana that he's doing it, he's using these tools. Why he's using these tools, I don't necessarily know. Like, how does God benefit? I know why I use the tools as opposed to doing it with my hands. I don't know why HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses the tools. I can understand a little bit, we'll get this more in the first Perek of Mesillas Yesharim. There are different reasons why HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses to not make himself totally evident in this universe. And Ramchal discussed that extensively in Das Tvunos, which is a sefer of Machshava about the last couple of animamins, cast as a conversation between the neshama and the seichel. But in Mesillas Yesharim, in Perek Aleph, we'll see Mitzvah soon. So one point that he raises is, if God was totally obvious, there would be no Nisayim. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if everything was evident, so then you would, theoretically, I would have the Chir Chavshis. Let's say you're hiking along an escarpment. An escarpment is when you have a ridge trail. You have a mountain, you have a cliff, you have a mountain face, and there's like a trail, that, you know, there's like a ridge that goes along there. So you're going hiking along an escarpment. On one side is rock face, on the other side is a sheer drop. If the escarpment is very narrow, you probably don't belong there. But if it's wide enough, it's okay, it can be done. So, in theory, you have Bechir Chavshis to walk off the side. Any healthy, well-adapted human being who has a healthy instinct for self-preservation is not really an option. You're not you. Baruch Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu built you, that you're not, if you thought about walking off, if you're in a healthy, good place, you can't. I mean, in theory you could, but you wouldn't. It would be absurd. And you couldn't. If you are thinking seriously of jumping off the side, you should. Or if someone you know seems like he is thinking for himself, you should immediately seek help. Immediately seek help. Normal, healthy, well-adapted people is not, of course I wouldn't do it. That's absurd. Why would I do that? So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very evident in this world, in theory I could do an Avera. Yeah, but Why on earth would I jump off a cliff? Why on earth would I jump into a furnace? That's the most absurd thing in the world. Nisyonos wouldn't be real if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very evident. That's certainly one of the reasons, not the only one, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses to be inobvious in this world. So for that reason, he could do the job directly, but he chooses to sometimes have a frontman. So there's a lot more to say. But there's a lot more to say about this. But again, I give the mashal of the tool more just to have the sense, not that we have the same motivation as HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but at least that phenomenon of, even though my finger is not on the pipe, I am the one who cut the pipe. Even though the pipe never, my fingers never touched the pipe. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing it, even though he's using tools. Yeah.
Yeah. The Nebuah was given that there were
that there
were going to be four
galaxies.
How come we were so surprised that the
Beis HaMikdash
was destroyed? It was preordained.
Yavi asks, why were we so surprised that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? It was already told to Avram, it was already told to Yaakov. That's true. As a matter of fact, it was even told directly to that generation. You open up Sefer Yirmiyah, you open up Sefer Malachim, but Yirmiyahu even more. And again, you open up Yishayahu, and you open up for the Treyasar. Most of the Treyasar lived before Yirmiyahu. Some of them even lived before Yeshaya. I think Hosea was was Yeshaya's Rebbe's Rebbe. If you look at the Rambam's chain of Masorah, the Nevi'im were telling the Jews for decades, if not centuries, if you don't cease and desist your Avodah Zarah, if you don't cease and desist your abuse of people, if you don't cease and desist your dishonesty, if you don't cease and desist your rampant lack of tznius and the rampant decadence in adultery, if you don't cease and desist taking advantage of people who are weak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. He's going to send you to Gaul. Will you stop already? That is one of the primary themes of Nevi'im Acharonim is stop doing Averus or else you lose the Beis HaMikdash. And we didn't listen. That is the nature of being human, is that people don't always make rational decisions. As a matter of fact, many psychologists say that most people usually don't make rational decisions. It's certainly the case that most disagreements are not ended through rational discourse. Unfortunately, it can be. You should develop the type of person who is able to hear what other people have to say, even if it's not pleasant, to be always as hatokachos, to invite, to appreciate constructive criticism is one of the great tools for improving your life and improving the impact you make on this world. But it's a tool that is available for everyone, but most people choose not to take. And indeed, most Jews did not listen to the Nevi'im, and they made horrible life decisions, and they did all sorts of averus, and did not pull themselves out of the moral muck, and the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed.
You know, my question is, was there anything that they could have done to prevent? Because Nebuchadnezzar were true, though. Like, if Hashem told Yaakov they were going to...
Yeah, but the Nevuah L'ra can be changed if people do tshuva. Nevuah L'tova is locked in. Nevuah L'ra could be changed. We could have done tshuva, but this was the default plan, and we did not rise above it. So we got the full default plan. I'll share with you briefly, to cap this off, before we head back to the Beis HaMedrash, to work on the sugya of Balechem and Ashuk. So we saw so far, again, the question that I pointed out, the Ramban never said explicitly, but it's clearly driving this whole conversation, is two core questions in the Pesukim, two textual questions. Number one, why are the Malachim going up and then down, as opposed to going down and up? We usually imagine Malachim being headquartered in Shemayim. And number two, what's the relationship between the vision of the Malachim on the ladder and then the subsequent message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Hinei Nechima. So the pshuto shel Mikra Bana given was that Malachim going up and down, that sort of gives you the back and forth, Malachim seeking information, reporting back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then the Malachim, you know, coming back down to carry out instructions. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, but you're not, that's what usually happens, you're not going to happen. I'll derech durah, so it's either or. Right, the two options. The Malachim version versus HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shmarti B'chol Asher Teilech. The Ramban, the Ramban's, the second approach Ramban presented, from the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, derech drash, it was not either or, two alternatives, but A and B in parallel. They're both happening simultaneously. This is the Malachim going up and down. Number one is the rise and fall. It starts with up and then down, but it's the rise and fall of different Malchios. And that will happen, and at the same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will be taking care of you. So for the Pshuto Shel Mikra, it's either or. For the Medrash or the Pirkei Lezer, it's the two of them happening simultaneously. The Gemara in Chulin presents that the two of them happen b'zeh achar zeh. First, the Malachim up and down, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu steps in. How so? For the Gemara in Chulin says the following. I don't know if any of you came across this Gemara when Yeshiva learned Chulin 2 years ago. Very, very fascinating, I got it. And you may have heard of this either if you've not seen it inside, maybe you've heard of this outside. The Gemara says, why the Malachim going up and then coming down? The Gemara says, the Malachim, Yaakov Avinu is asleep. Here we come back to where we begin. The context. Yaakov Avinu is asleep. Asleep on Har Abayis. Sleeping on Har Abayis. Malachim, if that's not all, Malachim see this fellow sleeping on Har Abayis. And they go up, and they come back down to check again. Why are they going up and coming back down? So the Gemara says, well, Yechezkel HaNavi, the opening part of Yechezkel is Maisim HaKavim. It's the Haftar for the, we know it as Haftar for the first morning of Shavuos. I have thought over the years only somewhat tongue-in-cheek, that the minig is to sleep through the haftarah. The minig that gained a lot of popularity the last couple of centuries of staying up late, staying up all night, well, shavuos, the part of it, it makes it very difficult for people to stay awake for davening. And the part of davening that more people are asleep on than any other, the morning of shavuos at the Masikim Minyan is haftarah. Right. You try to stand. You try to stand as much as possible. You don't fall asleep in Brit Shmirah. Stand for laning. Then haftarah comes. Some people manage to stay up, but I think the first time I ever succeeded in actually hearing the whole haftarah, the first morning of Shavuos, was the first year that I decided to learn during the night, but go to sleep at Vasikin, say Kriyat Shema on the way home to Vasikin, and wake up a few hours later to daven shachar at normal time. It's transformative. You're tired, but not jet lag. The conversation for a different time. It transforms the following 2 days. You're tired. You're not in a different time zone. You got insufficient sleep. Okay. Exactly. You're tired but not jet lag. You're tired but not in a different time zone. So, very good. So it was the first time I ever heard the haftarah. It was remarkable. So Merkava, but you know, only someone tongue in cheek. Minik is all devout. We don't want people to pay too much attention to Ma'aseh Merkava. That's not the reason for the minik, but it is true that the Mishnah Chagiga tells us, first Mishnah, second parak, that Ma'aseh Merkava is deep Kabbalah, and you have to be on the level to the opening Mishnah of the second parak, and then the first few blot of the Gemara. You have to be on the level to understand the Kabbalah that's being presented there. We don't fully know what. Or all know what the images mean, but it's a description of how things work, the mechanics, how things work in Shemayim, different types of Malachim, the Alfanim, and the Chayas, and the Shrafim, and the description here of the Kisya covered. Metaphorically speaking, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a throne, king has a throne, so the throne for the divine king has four sides, and each side, the Navi tells us, has a different image. Aryeh, Nesher, different versions. Exactly how Hashem is done on them. Well, one of them is a Pnei Ish, the face of a person, a human face.
Okay.
Not HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have a human face. His throne, whatever that means, it refers to, has, so to speak, four faces. One of those four faces is a human face. So the Gemara says, you know which human?
Yeah.
Yaakov. The Gemara says, listen carefully, this is very practical. About to become very practical. Gemara says that the Malachim will go up. They hear the sleeping Yaakov. They go up to Shamayim to check the face of Yaakov on the Kisya Kavod, and they come back down. And they say he doesn't compare to the face of Yaakov up in Shamayim, and they're ready to kill him for that. And Kadosh Baruch Hu comes and says, "Hinei Anochi Imach." Kadosh Baruch Hu comes after Malachim go up and down, and they're ready to get rid of Yaakov Avinu. After the Baruch steps in and says, take it easy, I'm not letting the Malachim harm Yaakov. What does this mean? There's a cute verse that captures part of the deeper significance here. A verse that apparently my grandfather, or Mel Shefty, used to sometimes tell over. Achein yesh Hashem v'malkam azeh. V'anochi lo yadati. And Yaakov Avinu wakes up and says, Achein, yesh Hashem v'malkam azeh. But anochi, I did not know. So this is not Pshul Shemikr. Rumel pointed out, Achein, Aleph Ches Nun, anochi, is the same three letters plus the Yud. It says, Achein, yesh Hashem v'malkam azeh. I knew that there was Aleph Chaf Nun, Aryeh Kruv Anesha. But v'anochi lo yadati. I didn't know that there's Arye Nesher Kruv and Yud for Yaakov. I didn't realize that I'm on the Kisya Kavod. It's a cute miracle. But it captures the significance that the Gemara is bringing out. What does it mean? The Malachim go, they check Yaakov Inu down below is not the same as Yaakov Inu in Shamayim. The way the Bali Musa understand what the Gemara is driving at is that Pnei Yaakov on the Kisya Kavod means the full potential of Yaakov realized. If Yaakov Avinu would, the image in Shamayim is the maximum that Yaakov could grow into. Here's what you could become. If you fully realize your potential, this is what you could be. The greatest that Yaakov could be. Malachim come down, and Malachim see Yaakov and say, hey, that looks, he looks sort of familiar, but not exactly. They go check in Shemayim, they come back, and you're like, you're not what you could be. You've been on this planet for a good 7+ decades, and you don't compare to where you could be. And they're ready to do him in. And Kosh Baruch Hu says, not so fast. Give the man another chance. He hasn't yet realized his potential. He has many, many decades to go, many more opportunities, many more decades in which he can more fully realize his potential. That's very, very, very powerful. Because it's often true that Anochi lo yadati. It's often true that I didn't know myself. That I did know that there's a Yud for Yaakov, or an Ayin for Akiva, or a Resh for Rafal, or a Zayin for Zvulun, whatever your name is. We often don't take ourselves seriously enough. I don't mean to be a serious, somber person as opposed to be b'simcha, chas v'sham. To be male simcha, you adraba, you have much deeper, greater joy and satisfaction, not just a superficial facade, when you recognize that you're capable of making a real impact. You're capable of real self-development, and you're capable of making real impact on your own life, on the people around you. When you start believing in your capacity, it doesn't mean it's all going to happen tomorrow. Like, I think we had mentioned the letter of Rebbe Hutner. He was very unhappy about art scroll biographies. Not art scroll, he was before art scroll, but that style of biographies where every tzaddik was, you know, a tzaddik gomer from birth. And he knew Shas when he was 5 years old. And he was, you know, doing the new Chachmas Anis when he was 7 and doing the secret acts of Chesed when he was 4 years old. So Hutner said, it's inaccurate and it's very counterproductive. Not some tzaddikim were like that, but many tzaddikim were not born tzaddikim. Many tzaddikim were not, were not necessarily brilliant, and B, may have been brilliant and not necessarily using that brilliance for learning from a young age. And not only is it inaccurate and false to think that every single tzaddik was a tzaddik gomer from the get-go, you don't have to go farther than Rabbi Akiva or Moshe Rabbeinu to notice that not every... two of the greatest tzaddikim of all Jewish history were not classic tzaddikim as youths. And Hutner says, not only is it false, it's also incredibly counterproductive. Because I look in the mirror, and I'm already more than 7 years old, and I don't know all of Shas, I don't know all of Zohar, and I'm not yet doing all these hidden Maisei Chesed. So if every tzaddik who ever lived was a tzaddik gomer from the get-go, so obviously there's no hope for me because I missed the train pulled out of the station 10 years ago and I wasn't on it. But he says, but it's not true. Some tzaddikim were like that and plenty of tzaddikim were not like that. Rabbi Akiva was not a big tzaddik when he was 10 years old. He was not a big tzaddik when he was 17 or 18 years old. He was not, according to Chazal, a big tzaddik when he was 39 years old. He says he hated Rabbanim until age 40. Hated. He told the Talmidim, when I was younger, if you would give me a rabbi, I would bite him like a donkey. And he became one of the greatest Talmid Chachamim of all time. We often don't view ourselves as having real potential, or else we think, you know, I'm not realizing my potential, so I should just give up. So, and that was the Malachim's take. Here's Yaakov could be, here's Yaakov actually is, and there's a big divide between actual Yaakov and potential Yaakov. So, shine, actual Yaakov does not deserve to continue to survive because he's not realizing the potential. And Kosh Baruch Hu said no. That was stage one. Stage one was Malachim going up and down, and they're ready to destroy Yaakov. You know. And afterwards, Bezeh Hazeh, Hinei Anochi Imach. Kosh Baruch Hu said, no. I'm with you. Shmarticha, you're going to go into Gauls, you're going to difficult places, you're going to come back, and you can succeed far more than you think you can, and you can succeed far more than you already have. And that's the very, as I said before, this third approach of the Gemara and Kulin is a very, very practical one. The first approach, I'll be speaking to, was that Kadosh Baruch Hu was going to give protection to Yaakov, and Yaakov is very passive. The second approach of the Prigid Lezer, that Kadosh Baruch Hu was going to give protection to Kalal Yisrael. But once again, it's only a focus on Kadosh Baruch Hu. The third approach, Goran Kulin, is Kadosh Baruch Hu believing in Yaakov's capacity, that Yaakov has potential, and that Yaakov has the ability to realize his potential even though he has not yet done so. And that's a very, very powerful sense of it's comfort and the machayev. That you're good, it's okay that you haven't yet fully realized your potential, and at the same time you should be ambitious. There's so much more that each of you could accomplish. There'll be opportunities in your lives, big moments, and millions of little moments, that you could mamish become much more than you think you can. If you strive for that, you're striving for the Yaakov and Shamayim, it's hard to imagine how much you can accomplish. So these are some of the ideas that emerge just from the opening vision of the way this is the way Yaakov dreamt. We should dream the way Yaakov dreamt. We should dream of our own ladders. We should dream of our own potential.